The embarrassing decline, descent into oblivion, and final disgrace of Robert Mueller on this week's episode of The Uprising.
LibertyNation.com. They're the resistance, but we are the uprising with Scott Cosenza and Tim Donner.
There's not going to be a President Donald Trump.
Hey, a president! Can you believe it?
I love the poorly educated.
The voters have guaranteed themselves slavery, economic disaster.
I can't believe I'm losing to this guy.
You could put half of Trump's supporters into what I call the basket of deplorables.
I have never met with Russians.
Our elected representatives can abuse subordinates and then secretly use a slush fund of our money to pay them off.
The media resorts to personal attacks without any content other than to incite anger.
Well, hi again, everybody. As many a sportscaster has said over the years, Tim Donner in for your regular host, Scott Cosenza, on this week's edition of The Uprising. Of course, Scott likes to refer to me as the immediate past co-host and current Joe Biden correspondent, now elevated for 1 week to the lofty perch of your solo host for The Uprising. And of course, the whole week, I mean, it's always a slow week in July, right? Pretty much all of July, though Congress is still in session, so it's not completely down, but it's the summer. People are at the beach, they're traveling, they're on vacation, so not a whole lot happens. So when something like the Robert Mueller hearing occurs, all the attention focuses on that. And of course, it was being trumpeted as one of the major appearances by a public figure in recent years, or perhaps in decades. Of course, that was CNN and MSNBC and the New York Times and the Washington Post and all the rest. You know who they are. But this was, I have to say, an extraordinary failure. Failure of former special counsel Robert Mueller. He couldn't defend his own report. He couldn't shed any new light on his almost two-year-long investigation. And it's hard to imagine in the end, folks, a steeper fall from grace than the one experienced by Robert Mueller this week. I mean, the left had invested so many of their hopes and dreams of taking down Donald Trump by any means which avail themselves, they'd invested so much in him. And then he went before two congressional committees, and he was reduced, certainly in the swamp and likely in the eyes of most American people, from a man presented as a paragon of competence and integrity and virtue and honor, to a doddering old man stumbling over and over. It was painful, actually, seeming to be uninformed about his own report. And the thing that was notable was that both sides of the political divide agreed that it was an embarrassing performance, and particularly considering that this was Mueller's swan song. I mean, this is it for him. He's off the stage forever. And if he wasn't going to be, you know, anticipating this testimony, then it certainly is now, because it was nothing short of full-on embarrassing. Now, let's just take it back, shall we, to the days leading up to the Mueller testimony, the much-anticipated Mueller testimony. And I want you to listen to what was anticipated from the Mueller testimony, and we present it to you in the form of the far-left California Congressman Ted Lieu. You remember him? He's the guy who said he would love to be able to regulate speech, but of course that pesky little thing called the Constitution got in the way, First Amendment, all that. But this is sort of, listen to his almost breathless anticipation for the Mueller hearing coming up in a couple days.
Their minds may be blown because they're going to see facts that they never saw. They're going to be seeing that the president directed his White House counsel to fire the special counsel. That's a crime. Mm-hmm. They're going to see that the president directed his White House counsel to then cover that up and create a fake document. That's a second crime. And then you're going to see that he directed Corey Lewandowski to ask Jeff Sessions to limit their investigation into Donald Trump. That's a third crime.
Ooh, big stuff was going to happen at the Robert Mueller hearing. But then what actually happened? And if you saw it, it was painful. It was truly painful. But I've taken his, about 6.5, 7 hours worth of testimony and basically summarized it right here. Listen if you
don't
can.
Don't use the word collusion. The word we usually use is not collusion. Can you read, repeat the question? Could you repeat the question for me again? I'm sorry, what was the question?
Can you read the last question? Can you repeat the question?
Can you repeat the last part of that question? That went a little fast for me. You have to repeat that for me. Can you repeat the question? I'm sorry, could you repeat that one? I apologize.
Sure.
Can you start it again? I'm sorry, could you again repeat the question? Pardon me? Sorry, can you move the microphone a little closer?
Director, please speak into the microphone.
I'm sorry, thank you.
Director, could you speak more directly into the microphone?
I'd have to look more closely at the statute.
I just read it to you.
I have no knowledge on either. Don't know that for sure. I am not familiar with that. I'm not going to comment on that. I'm not going to try to explain that.
I'm not going to speak to that.
Can't get into that. That's not within my purview. It was outside our purview. Can't get into that.
A lot of things you can't get into.
Jim Jordan. Yeah, a lot of things you can't get into, like the entire matter of how the investigation began, the entire matter of how George Papadopoulos was set up by a stooge or an intelligence operative who dropped a story on him, which was later repeated and became the basis for the FBI spying on Trump. And then, of course, eventually the Mueller investigation. But I mean, that was just a pathetic performance. We've saved you the trouble of listening to 7 hours by giving you that. What was that? 1 minute of Mueller's incoherent babbling in front of a national audience anticipating this powerful presentation, right? That this was going to be a damning indictment of Trump because Mueller would drill down into how he did what he did. And boy, if he had his way, Trump would be behind bars, right? We all know that he was part of a much larger plan to kneecap Donald Trump from the beginning. And he was a willing participant in it. I mean, he was part of the whole swamp culture. I mean, he has been for a long time. The guy was the FBI director, good friends with James Comey. He knows all of these people. He's worked with Strzok and Page and all these people. He knows all of them. And he's an ally of them, and he's particularly an ally in trying to defend the D.C. establishment against the onrising, uprising tide of populism sweeping through the country that elected Donald Trump and is likely to reelect him. And by the way, if you haven't gone to libertynation.com to see my brilliant observations and prediction, bold prediction, no probablys, no perhapses, just a bold, unambiguous prediction on libertynation.com that Donald Trump will win 350 or more electoral votes and will be reelected to a second term. The title of the piece, by the way, is Trump will be reelected and it won't be close. Okay. Finished with the shameless personal trolling of myself and you. Well, maybe not. But I promise I won't do it anymore. Okay. So, where were we? We were talking about the, what else? It's the only thing there is to talk about, the Mueller testimony. Now, just as notable as what Mueller said or tried to say when he wasn't babbling incoherently or stumbling or asking for questions to be repeated or being asked to move closer to the mic was what he didn't say. And what he didn't say or refused to say or said was out of his purview. You heard that at the end of that babbling compilation of Mueller's testimony. What he said was that George Papadopoulos And Joseph Mifsud and Stephen Halper and these people investigating them was out of his purview, wouldn't comment on it at all. Wouldn't say anything about that, won't comment on it, can't say, won't say, prohibited from saying, whatever. 17 different forms of, I'm not going to answer that question. But Jim Jordan, who's probably the most effective member of the Judiciary Committee in the House, by most all accounts, he went after Robert Mueller on this whole business of Joseph Mifsud, and it's been proven that he dropped this story on George Papadopoulos, which started the whole thing. Here's how Mueller handled the questions from Jim Jordan.
When the special counsel's office interviewed Mifsud, did he lie to you guys too?
Can't get into that.
Did you interview Mifsud?
Can't get into that.
Is Mifsud Western intelligence or Russian intelligence?
Can't get into that.
A lot of things you can't get into.
Yeah, a lot of things you can't get into. You heard that before. That's Jim Jordan. It's all the things that he couldn't get into, Robert Mueller, were things that would have hurt the Democrats, would have hurt the Obama administration, would have hurt the Obama Justice Department, would have hurt the Hillary Clinton campaign, would have hurt Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, and the entire Democratic Party. So all the things that Robert Mueller couldn't get into are things that would have hurt the Democratic Party. It's just about that simple. But Jim Jordan then carried on with this line of questioning, or statement is probably a more accurate way to put it.
Maybe a better course of action is to figure out how the false accusation started. Maybe it's to go back and actually figure out why Joseph Mifsud was lying to the FBI. And here's the good news. That's exactly what Bill Barr is doing. And thank goodness for that. That's exactly what the Attorney General and John Durham are doing. They're going to find out why we went through this three-year saga and get to the bottom of it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that day of reckoning is coming, folks. It's coming. First of all, we've got the Inspector General report. We haven't heard too much about that in a while, but Michael Horowitz, the IG, has been looking into this for months now. Now, of course, he doesn't have the ability to refer for prosecution anybody, but the Attorney General does. And we know that William Barr has been conducting an ongoing and, by all accounts, elevating investigation into the origins of this whole Trump-Russia collusion, delusion, fantasy, whatever you want to call it. But now you see what Mueller refused to say. And I'll tell you what, as upset as the Democrats must have been at Mueller's pathetic performance, the people who were really upset, you could see it in their eyes, you could see it in the tone of their voice, you could see it in their body language, was the leftist media. Boy, they were just counting. They were counting the hours until they had new, fresh headlines they could scream about Trump-Russia collusion. Maybe in the end there really was collusion. And certainly the obstruction question is now back in play. That's the headlines they were looking for. But in the end, what they got was a rank disappointment. You could hear it from, among other people, Jeremy Bash on MSNBC, of all places.
Far from breathing life into the report, he kind of sucked the life out of the report. I thought he was boring. I thought in some cases he was sort of evasive. He didn't want to explain or expand on his rationale. He seemed lost at times. He was kind of flipping through the report, trying to find passages that members of Congress were reading to him. And I thought it really was a very ineffective defense of his own work.
And I think that was actually, believe it or not, on MSNBC, an honest assessment of what we all saw before our eyes. But wait, that's not all. How about over on CNN, the headquarters of Trump derangement syndrome, at CNN, Phil Mudd, who was one of the big attackers of Donald Trump among the many at CNN, pretty much all of them, he said that, you know, this was an utter failure by Robert Mueller, and the Democrats just better let this whole collusion and impeachment thing, they better just let it go.
The problem with Mueller's testimony on this issue is that he had to carry the ball for them some way, whether he wanted to or not, at least by being a vigorous, strong, rock-solid prosecutor. And he looked like somebody who'd slowed a step or two, and perhaps, as one of the as the Republicans are starting to put out there, maybe he wasn't even in control of all those angry Democrats. Maybe he's a figurehead, somebody from the past that they put there so they could do their dirty work. That's the theory they're coming out with.
Indeed. It was hard not to reach the conclusion that all the reports about Mueller being an absentee special counsel, about him being a figurehead at the top of this chain where Andrew Weissman, his deputy, the attack dog, the pro-Hillary Clinton investigator who was actually at Clinton headquarters, I don't know if he was in the room with her or not, but was at Clinton headquarters the night she lost to Donald Trump, that he was the one who was running the show. And I think anybody who was paying attention knew that. And boy, if they didn't know it before, do they ever know it now after seeing Robert Mueller, who's just like a, you know, an empty suit and a name at the top of a, you know, of a letterhead that you add on there for prestige. And he didn't even know about his own report that he put his name on that was over, what was it, over 400 pages, 420 pages, whatever it was. I mean, I think it couldn't possibly have gone worse for him, could it? Maybe he could have made more contradictions. Maybe he could have literally, like George H.W. Bush did when he went to Japan, he could actually toss his cookies in the middle of the congressional hearing. I mean, that's about the only thing I could think of that would be worse than what befell him in this memorable, not for him, a testimony before two congressional committees who were so hungry, to have him say something, anything, that would, you know, that would reinvigorate the story. Because they need the headlines. I mean, they're losing ever since the Mueller report came out, and it was clear there was no collusion, and the idea of obstruction was a stretch at best, considering no crime had been committed. Yes, it's technically possible, I know, to obstruct a crime that wasn't committed or that you weren't charged for, but it's an obscurity. And it's in only the most obscure kind of case. I'm sure that the case law, Scott could tell you more, but I'm sure that the case law doesn't support many cases of obstruction of justice in the case where the crime you're allegedly obstructing didn't actually occur. Oh, yeah, that. Now, in the wake of all this, of course, there's the question of whether the Democrats will carry on with impeachment. And I think Mudd, we just played Phil Mudd from CNN, and he said, you know, this is over, and this is nothing new. I mean, Terry Moran said the same thing at ABC. This is over. I mean, the idea that you're going to impeach him based on anything that came out of the Mueller report, out of that whole investigation, is unlikely at best. So you can forget about it. I'm sure the Democrats will be changing the subject, although here we are a day later, and they want to have grand jury testimony unsealed. Jerry Nadler's asking for grand jury testimony to be unsealed, which is strictly prohibited, against the law. It is the law that was passed by Congress. So the simple answer to Mr. Nadler is, you don't like the rule, change the law, and then maybe you can get the grand jury testimony that was related to the Mueller investigation. But, you know, they keep on keeping on. I think they may honestly have convinced themselves that they were elected to run the House in order to investigate Donald Trump until they drop, until there's no blood left to squeeze out of the stone. Have they not reached that point yet? I mean, you'd think that they had reached that point when they saw the Mueller thing was tanking, that there was no collusion, and they knew that from the beginning. But once it was clarified 22 months after the investigation began, when Mueller announced there was no collusion and he wouldn't make a decision on obstruction, a lot of political courage there, a lot of moral courage too, making no decision, passing it down to William Barr, knowing that Barr would be condemned by the left if he didn't charge Trump with obstruction. So, I mean, it's all orchestrated. You can see it developing right before your eyes. The question now is whether the American people are being flummoxed by this. I mean, I don't think they are. That's why I predicted that Donald Trump would win 350 or more electoral votes in 2020. Now, I had a couple other things this week. Donald Trump was out there on the squad. Now, he wasn't picking as much on Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez this week. No, this week his target was Rashida Tlaib, the crazy woman from up in Michigan. And did you see the footage that was released of Tlaib going to a Trump rally in 2016, and she started screaming and carrying on completely out of control, had to be carried out by security. And that footage was just released recently, last week maybe? And, I mean, if you haven't seen it, this woman, it's like Trump said, pretty much hard to believe that this woman could get elected to Congress.
I watched her this morning. She's vicious. She's like a crazed lunatic. She's screaming. This is before she got into Congress. Who elected her? She's screaming like a total lunatic at one of our rallies. This is not a sane person, folks. She called our country and our people garbage. That's worse than deplorable. Remember deplorable? Oh, yes, you do. Huh? Remember Hillary, the deplorables. She actually said a word that was worse. She said deplorables, and what was the second word? Go ahead. Irredeemables.
Irredeemables. And he makes an interesting point there, too, because as much as the word deplorables was the one that was the pull quote out of that infamous statement by Hillary Clinton, arguably the most damaging single political statement made in American history, it was the word irredeemable that should have been pulled out. Because if you think about it, someone who's deplorable can probably be taught or re-educated not to be deplorable. But if you're irredeemable, that precludes the option of drawing someone back from the edge of sanity or insanity, whatever you want to term it. So here we are in the wake of the Mueller report, the post-Mueller era, I think we can now call it, can't we? I mean, the guy's not coming back on stage. The Democrats certainly wouldn't want him to. The Republicans might. I mean, I'm still shaking my head. I just can't believe how hapless this Mueller guy was. But anyway, so in this post-Mueller era with these Democrats, and they've got their debate coming up, they got their second round of debates coming up this week in Detroit, which, of course, is in Michigan, a state they have to win if they have any hopes of unseating Donald Trump and denying him a second term. But what are the Democrats left to think in this post-Mueller era? Now, they fired all their artillery at Donald Trump, and it turned out they were all blanks. So what do they do now? Mueller investigation's over. Russia collusion is over. Obstruction of justice is over. I guess the Southern District of New York can cook up some kind of investigation into the Trump the Trump business operations. But other than that, all this ammunition's been fired. So what do they do? Okay, what they're doing, which would seem to be ultimately counterproductive, is they're now going after Trump's voters. Okay, so they can't get Trump. They've tried. God knows they've tried. They can't get him. So now they have to go after the voters, the evil people who are just as bad as Trump because they voted for him. And you saw that starting to creep in, particularly last year, 2018, where you were getting commentators saying that if you're a woman, you know, that voted for Trump and you say, well, he may be a racist, but I'm not. Well, that's not true. You are a racist. Kirsten Power said that on CNN. If you're a woman and you voted for Donald Trump, you're not a racist. You're a racist. So she just condemned 30 million women, give or take, who voted for Donald Trump. This is the tack that the left has started to take because they've absolutely lost their minds at the feet of Donald Trump. They've tried everything to bring him down. They've tried everything to separate him from his voters, and none of it has worked. His approval rating is higher than ever. Even ABC News, Washington Post poll had him at 47%, the highest point of his presidency. So they can't seem to get Trump. So what are they going to do? You'd think what they try to do then is to go get the Trump voters, which is what they're doing, but in exactly the opposite way that they should. Instead of trying to appeal to them and say, come back home, come back into the fold, we want you voting Democrat again and appealing to their interests. Instead, they go the other way and they say, you're as bad as that vile racist in the White House that you voted for. So they're trying to alienate the 60 plus million people who voted for Donald Trump. They think this is the right electoral strategy to condemn the Trump voters. Now, Chris Hayes gave Exhibit A in this whole, I don't know, I don't know if you should call it a strategy. I mean, how could it be a strategy to insult the millions of voters that you need to win over to win the presidency? So whether it's a strategy or they literally just lost their mind so much because of Donald Trump, they're so deranged by Donald Trump that they actually have convinced themselves that it is a good strategy. Chris Hayes on MSNBC said all these coalitions of big business and social conservatives and populist, plain folk from the Midwest are all combining together that there's into this coalition behind Trump. And the only thing that can be done is to rip the heart out of the Trump coalition that put him in office.
That sentiment at the core of the coalition cannot be pried loose, and it cannot be negotiated with, and it cannot be appeased. It must be peacefully, nonviolently, politically destroyed with love, compassion, and determination, but utterly confronted and destroyed. That is the only way to break the coalition apart, not by prying off this or that interest. They are in too deep. They have shamed themselves too much. The heart of the thing must be ripped out.
Well, there it is. But we're going to rip out the heart with love and compassion. I mean, can you put that in the same sentence, honestly? So what he's saying is that at the heart of the Trump movement is racism. That's what drives the movement, not smaller government, not lower taxes, not less intrusive government, not private health care, not the free market, not lower taxes, but racism. And Trump appeals to that darkness inside his voters. And therefore, they are, just as we played Trump saying earlier, irredeemable. Isn't this what Chris Hayes is saying? The same thing as Hillary Clinton. These people are irredeemable. Don't even try to get them. What you have to do is confront them and beat them down, rip out their heart with love and compassion. All right, that's all the fun I'm allowed to have for this week. Scott will be back next week. Thanks for indulging me this week. And if you like this, if you haven't already subscribed to The Uprising, please do. And remember, it's available on demand at libertynation.com, as is Liberty Nation Radio and our other podcast hosted by managing editor and international correspondent Mark Angelides, The Rabbit Hole, Politics and Prose, Where Past is Prologue. Thanks for indulging me again this week. Tim Donner, signing out. See you soon.